Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Thank you, what's your name again? Thank you, Gail, for that rousing, whatever. I'm very privileged to be here. Incidentally, my name is Wally, and I'm definitely an alcoholic. Back in Phoenix, they call me Black Wally because there's so many white Wallys. I remember the time when I was the only Wally. I go back just that far. Somebody said, make a long story short. Don't tell it. But I've got to say something because something happened in my life. There was a sickness, and then there was the recovery, and the sickness after the recovery. So I think I have something small to talk about up here. You know, this old boy gave his mother a parrot, you know, and called up in a few days, you know. He said, Mom, said, how did you like the parrot? She said, boy, it was delicious. He says, oh, lady, you wasn't supposed to eat that parrot. He said, I spent a lot of money for that parrot and taught him two different languages. She said, well, goddammit, why did you say something then? There's definitely a time to talk, and like our girls, I am nervous. They told me that when you are nervous, when you're speaking at an AA meeting, that's God shaking the truth out of you. So I felt a little better after I heard that. In the beginning, I had a lot of nerves and a lot of fears, almost from childhood. Why? I don't know. And practically, I don't care anymore because it's a condition that I finally got over. After years, through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, now, I was deathly afraid of girls. I mean afraid of them damn females. But after I had a few drinks, the girls were scared of me then. And you know what? If drinking had did as much for you, you'd have drank some more of it too. I started off drinking alcohol as more of a medication than as a social lubricant. I was, if I went to your party and you were serving alcohol, you just had some more of my medicine. But then I had to have it on a daily basis after a few years. And I graduated to sherry wine. You know, I hated alcohol. I really did. You may not believe this. I didn't like the taste of it, but I loved sherry because it was not sweet. It was it would go down a lot easier than hard liquor. And I thought I'd found the elixir of life. There's nothing wrong with sherry wine either. Matter of fact, it's good for breakfast. Now, just one little catch. It will drive you utterly berserk. Other than that, there ain't a damn thing wrong with it. You know, the old wino was, two old winos drank together, and one of them fell out dead, and the other went down to the county funeral home to look at him in his $25 box. And an old man walked up, he said, "Son," said, "what did your friend die of?" He says, "What did he die of? That wine killed him deader than hell. That's what he died of." He said, "Well, why didn't somebody tell him about them AA meetings?" He said, "Hey, wait a minute now, he wasn't that bad." I finally became an adult. And, I had an adult's body. Well, I knew I was an adult because I smelled like one. But by that time, I had loused a woman and a couple of kids around. I had added to that family. I married a woman with a couple of kids and added to the family. And that was a damn mess. I wondered, where the hell did I find a goddamn woman and them damn mean-ass, ugly little kids? And I was most unhappy, but one good thing come out of it, I did have somebody to blame my drinking on. Now, I went to high school and I didn't finish that. I went to college and I didn't finish that. I went to the penitentiary and I finished that. Like the old boy said, he was a pathological drunk. Any path he took was logical as hell. He's going to be a lousy, dirty, stinking, rotten, shitty-ass drunk. Now, here's my problem right here. My problem is not other people. Although, as I said a few moments ago, I did blame my ex-wife for my drinking, and I got to the place to start blaming the police and all kinds of authorities, and I hated them too. But you see, my problem was here. I've got an old rotten body that can't handle alcohol, but then on the other hand, I got a dang bad mind that keeps telling me I can. That itty bitty shitty committee that live right up here. I heard an old boy say one time that he would be walking down the streets in perfect peace and serenity, feeling good, and suddenly his mind would attack him. He said, "There's the Apex Bar over there. Go over there and get you a drink, because you sure as hell ain't no alcoholic." Now, that's what his mind was telling him. And then all of a sudden, he snapped out of it and said, "Hey, you better call your sponsor. You're thinking shitty." The next thought come to him, says, "Hell no, don't call him. He'll just tell you not to take it." So he gave himself permission to go get shredded. I go to a meeting almost on a daily basis after several years in this program simply because of my head. If it was not for my head, I could go somewhere and retire and never see AA again and never see you people, and I'd be in good shape except for this. Do it for yourself. Never do it for anybody else. Now, I believe in God. Capital G-O-D, God. I don't have to bite my tongue anymore. I can say that I love everybody in this room and not have to bite my tongue anymore. And you know why? Because I wouldn't see anyone in this room out there drunk if I could personally do anything about it. I learned to stay sober one day at a time. I was admonished to regulate my whole life around one day and ask them why. And they told me, because you can't even starve in a day. Don't you know you can't starve in one day? Somebody said life by the inch is a cinch, but life by the yard is hard. And I believe that too. That's why I live it one day at a time. I don't care what bad thing goes down, I still live life just one day at a time. Not only do I stay sober one day at a time, but my life has been lived one day at a time and is being lived one day at a time. Only now I can accept it. And acceptance is the key word in my program. I don't have a problem getting along with people anymore. I used to have a horrible problem getting along with people. No more. I get along with everybody just great. I'm not looking for nothing big out of life anyway. And you know, when I started that feeling, when I got to the point where the world didn't owe me nothing, and if I had a little something to give, for God's sakes, give it. And when I got to that state, I didn't have to worry about people anymore. Matter of fact, I don't even believe anybody can say, S-A-Y, anything to hurt your feelings. I don't believe that. Now, I'm not talking about somebody with a baseball bat. You shoot him. I run like hell one. You can't stand him, get bludgeoned to death, you know. But what people say don't mean doodly squat. Now, I imagine somebody right now in this room haven't heard a word I said, and it's okay. I listen to whatever I think is positive and turn off anything I feel is negative. And it worked like a charm. One day at a time. But by the grace of God. Oh, yeah. Let me speak on God just a little bit. God, as I understand it. I was an agnostic. I didn't know I was an agnostic. I didn't know what an agnostic was. Until I come to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I learned what an agnostic is. I'll give you an example. If Gordon said that was God, and Bob said that was no God, in the old days, I would have probably would have stuck my nose in that and said, well, either one of you could be right. That's an agnostic statement. Now, I don't care if Bob said there's no God or Gordon said this. I don't even want any parts of that argument. All I have to do is just believe that there's one, and there's one for me. And I think God and AA is tied in together. I may be a little biased there, but I really think so. I think they're just like a chain. And I go to an AA meeting, and I'm okay. I mean, okay. So I do believe in a power greater than that of myself. Now, somebody might jump up and say, you see, I don't care whether God exists or not. That used to be my problem when I was a drunk. Now, I don't care if he exists or not. I just accept the fact and believe that there is one. And somebody said, you mean to tell me you believe that bull? Sure. Why? Because that's the way they stay sober. That's why. It works. My sponsor believed like that. And he died with almost 40 years of sobriety. So it does work. He did not have to drink. I seen him die. A clean old man, clean through and through. He didn't have to drink. A few belts of that Sharon, I thought I was God. You know, the old man gets on the bus, you know, and he sees this car, and all the bus seats are filled, and he's filling one, and he sees a comely little lady holding on to the strap, you know, and he tells her, he says, "Honey, I would offer you my seat, nobody else will, but," he says, "I'm old like a John, and I'm tired, and I've got all these diseases, high blood pressure, and heart trouble, and arthritis and lumbago and everything else." He says, "So you can sit in my lap, but you don't have to worry about me because I'm just old Uncle John." So she sat in his lap, and the bus started hitting a few rough places, you know. He says, "Honey, you better get up. I ain't as old as I thought I was." "Today, I am a better man at age 62 than I was 22, in many respects. Because when I was age 22, I was crazy, I was drunk. By that time, I was probably in the joint, getting ready to go there one. And I had a wife, I had a beautiful wife. And I had a good job for a while, too. But nothing mattered to me but the lousy, dirty, stinking, rotten drink. Today, I refuse to take it. I must not take it. I bet not take it. If I do, I will declare my old butt null and void. I don't want to die drunk. I don't want to die coming up of a drunk. You know, I nearly died a few times coming off of a drunk, believe it or not. And these things don't happen to me until I do drink. Now, somebody said, "Well, if you're having all that problem with alcohol, why don't you quit?" Again, the itty-bitty, shitty committee. Especially after I start getting well. I'll buy back in the crap and be doing the same damn thing all over again. Now somebody's... I shudder to think what another drunk will do to me. It'll kill me. Somebody said, "Well, you're going to die anyway." Well, I don't give a damn. I ain't going that way. One day at a time, but by the grace of God. Now, I like to use the word stupid as applicable. Excuse me. I like to use the word stupid as applicable to me. Now, I'm not calling you people stupid. That's too many of you. But what happened the last time I went out and ran my ugly head back and took a drunk? I mean a drunk. I was a lousy, dirty, stinking, rotten, filthy, dirty, shitty and rotten and falling apart. Now, what the hell do I think going to happen the next time? Now, it shouldn't take a genius to figure that one out, and I should it now. Oh, I do cute little things, you know, like, I'm not going to try to give you a blow, blah, blow, drunk, you know, drunk-a-log. I don't think that'll, I think all of us in this room know how to drink. But I'd like to just tell you a few excerpts of my, experiences with, King Kong alcohol. I had drank my sherry, and I had had the dry heaves. I had had blackouts, people telling you what you said and what you did, and we had to stop so-and-so from killing you and all that stuff. I had experienced every bit of that. Matter of fact, speaking of blackouts, there was a bunch of dudes hanging out there on 16th Street, drinking out of a big bottle of Oso Negro. Now, our Spanish-speaking friends will tell you that means black bear. And I guess the biggest bottles on earth come from Mexico, don't they? That bottle is almost the size of a water jug. You know, one of those you put in the machine, you know. And if you'd have seen that bear on that label, that ought to have been enough to tell you to leave that shit alone. That bear was a mean-looking son of a gun. But I wanted a drink. I didn't have no money. Matter of fact, I called myself looking for a job that day. So if I could go over there and get a little belt, you know, to feel better, you know, well, there wasn't nothing wrong with that. So I go there and I know them guys. Sure. Another thing. I didn't even like them guys because it's bad mouth. But I needed a drink, you know. And I pull that bottle up to my lip, and that stuff like to knock the top of my head off. Now, it took my fingernails, my toenails, that made me feel great. My brain did a flip-flop, and nothing on earth would do better than another one of those. So I stuck around waiting for another one, and you know what? Woke up in Mexico. I know the serious drinkers in this room would believe me. And there I am, down there in Mexico, begging a ride back to Phoenix. Matter of fact, I had talked to a policeman down there. I don't know how it is now, but during the old days, you could sit on the streets and drink whiskey or wine or smoke marijuana. They didn't care. Cops didn't care. In those days, I don't know how it is now. I don't go down there no more. Because you see, they got a jail down there with rolled barbed wire on the edges of it, and they got no top, and the damn thing stay half full of water all the time. There's nothing in Vietnam would beat that. So he told me, he said, we got our problems down here. You got no money. Make the line. Yes, sir, man. I'm making it, too. And there I am down there thumbing a ride back to Phoenix, hopefully, prayerfully. Dirty and stinking and rotten and funky and filthy. I don't ever need to do that to me again, one day at a time, but by the grace of God. One night I come in, speaking of Black House, still on this subject. Bob told me I could drunk a log a little bit. And that night, I told my wife about my girlfriend. Now, the girl could have got a claw hammer and beat my damn brain out. But they tell me I hurt the girl so bad she went off somewhere and cried. The next morning, she was telling me about it. She'd have made a real good Al-Anon if I ever could have got her to go. My wife had a lot of cousins. I have never seen a woman with so many cousins in my life, and most of them male. And I hated them. They was like roaches all over the place. They come in and scrape the pots, stand around and talk crap, and they'd drink my bottle if they didn't think I'd break one of them's arm. But she had one cousin who was a massive man, and he became my drinking partner because he always stayed in a drink. That boy kept a drink all the time. He'd intimidate people on the streets, make them give him money. He'd walk up to Anybody strange on the streets, like I say, he was a hulk of a human being, you know. And he said, I know you're going to loan me a dollar. I said, yeah, you want two? He go in the liquor store, and he had the arms of a fan of King Kong. Back when the liquor store was crowded, he just reached over there, get him a bottle, and walk on out. So Lawrence was very interesting person to drink with. And so anyway, Lawrence, I thought Lawrence had ratted on me, getting back to the blackout. When my wife began to tell me about who my girlfriend was and where she lived at and all that stuff, I swore that Lawrence ratted on me, so I invited him out for a fight. I don't know what the hell I thought I was going to do to him. Anything that could hurt him is extinct now. But anyway, he follows me out like a grizzly bear, get out the backyard. He said, boy, what in the hell is wrong with you anyway? I said, Lawrence, you know what's wrong with me. You told Lola me about Ophelia. He said, you're a lying sack of shit. I didn't tell her a damn thing. You told her yourself, and I begged you to shut up, and you kept on talking to me. And, you know, I don't remember a thing in the world about it. And if anyone in this room believes that, and my wife sure as hell didn't believe it. She said, you blame a lot on the liquor. You know what you did, you so-and-so. And I wouldn't know what the hell she was talking about. Now, that's the way the stuff do me when I drink it. One day at a time, but by the grace of God, don't take the first drink. Take care of you. Mind of us I take care of you? Because if we don't take care of you, who the hell's going to take care of you? Now, not only that, but I could never love anyone until I got around to loving me. Don't resent people. They're not worth it. Don't get pissed off at nobody. I've got my program to work. And I got to go to bed tonight. And the next night and the next night, if that be the next night and the next night. And I don't want no hot rocks in my gut, see. I can't take you to bed with me in my stomach. No way. I have got to feel right by me, and the closest I can come feeling right by me is to feel right by you. The book said we're not saints, and we're not. But I don't have to be sick behind hating other people, too. And I did that, both drunk and sober. And I can't have that in my life no more. Speaking of God, the mental case in the mental hospital had his hand thrust in his clothes like this. The psychiatrist walked up and said, who do you think you are? He says, who do I think I am? I'm Napoleon. That's who I am. He said, well, who told you you was Napoleon? He says, sir, I'll have you know that God himself told me I was Napoleon. So the voice from the back of the ward said, he's just an old liar. I didn't tell him no such a damn thing. I don't see why in hell I had such a tough time with the God thing, because when I was a lousy, dirty, stinking drunk, that was God's all over the place. One day at a time, but by the grace of a loving God, and I swear to God, I believe in him. I like to be accepted. I am the acceptance in AA of good old Black Wally is fantastic. But then I'm accepted in almost any other area I go into. You know what I think acceptance is? When I can walk into a room full of people, not necessarily AAs, because AAs, they're extra special people. But when I can walk in a room, or at a PTA meeting, or any kind of a club or whatever, and nobody gives a damn whether I'm there or not. Now that's what I call acceptance. You know, instead of the old Rhino was stumbling down the streets, and he fell out, and the paramedic ran up there, snatched his britches down, and started blowing up his behind. Little old lady said, was standing there watching that, you know. She said, young man, so what, may I ask you, what are you doing to that man? He looks up and says, madam, if it's any of your business, I'm giving him resuscitation. She said, I don't know nothing about that, but you don't do it that way. You're supposed to be blowing in the man's mouth. He says, woman, have you smelled this wild old breath? I had an obsession to drink. I was obsessed with alcohol. The first few drinks of alcohol in my life surely must have warped my mind, because I've never been able to get it off my mind completely since. I know what it'll do to me. I know it'll kill me. I know the problems I've had within the past, and I can see other people die from the darn thing, and I still think a drink. I will take it, though, but I think it. I'm obsessed. You know, this old boy, he had a habit of breaking people's windows, you know. So the judge stuck him in the insane asylum because he thought maybe the doctors there might be able to help him. So finally he come up with he come before the doctor because he'd been complaining that he couldn't go home. And the doctor asked him, he said, if I let you go home, what's the first thing you'll do when you leave here? He said, well, I'm going to make a slingshot, come back in, break every damn window out of this place. He said, Doc said, no, you ain't going to do that because you ain't going nowhere. So a few more months, he was still hanging around complaining. And finally the doctor said, all right, if I let you go home, what's the first thing you do when you leave it? He said, well, like I told you before, baby, I'm going to make a slingshot, come back in, break every window. He said, well, he ain't ready to go. Get him out of my sight, boys. So he's back there bemoaning the fact that he can't go home. And finally, one of his fellow patients told him, he says, man, you ain't never going to go home as long as you keep telling that doctor you're going to break some more glass. He said, that's what they put you in here for, breaking glass. Tell him anything, but don't tell him that. Finally, come back before the doctor. The doc said, if I let you go home, what's the first thing you do when you leave here? I am going to get me a girlfriend. Beautiful. Then what? He says, I'm going to take my girlfriend to the park, and I'm going to lay her down, and I'm going to pull her panties off, and I'm going to take the elastic out of the panties and make a slingshot and break every goddamn window. He could not get that out of his head. I heard somebody talk today. I think while we was having a bite of food down there, I heard somebody saying that that they were obsessed to drink. And I can believe that, because I was obsessed to drink. But if you just don't take it today, you ain't never going to be well. I'll be an alcoholic till I die. But if you don't take it today, it will be easier tomorrow. You don't take a drink, no matter what happened, no matter who died, no matter who got elected to public office. You just don't do that. One with many who were powerless over alcohol, but our lives have become unmanageable. Well, my life had become is still unmanageable, but I just don't have to sleep in the park anymore. And if Gail want to fry a couple of eggs and some ham from next door for her and her husband, and you know I can smell that from next door and get sick. Now, a lot of people don't believe that. But that was the kind of shape that my system was in, that I could not even smell food, not speak of eating it. And God knows I can eat like a horse now. Yes, I've got an unmanageable life. But as a lousy, dirty, stinking, rotten, funky, nasty, filthy, shitty-ass drunk, I don't have no life at all. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. You know the kind of sanity I think you're talking about? Maybe I've been hinting around at it all the time I've been up here. I don't know. But I'm sober now. I've got a little something to think with. You know, you've seen the sign on the wall, think, think, think. Take an inventory. And this is alcohol. And despite the fact that I'm sober and got a little something to think with, I'll take it anyway. And there's not insanity. That's insane. I used to think they meant that I went out and got drunk and went crazy. And I did. But I don't think they mean that at all. It means that we are sober and we should have a little something upstairs here. Leave that lousy, stinking, rotten ass shit alone. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood Him. They said made a decision because they knew if we decided, we would probably do it. I have sober AA members come to me, you know, and they say, boy, I got so many problems. This is happening. That's happening. You know, I try to do a little sponsor work, you know. I said, well, have you taken the third step? I said, I don't know. What's the third step? Turn your will and your life over the care of God as you understood Him. Say, oh, yeah, I've done that. Well, if you've done that, you ain't got a damn thing to worry about. Now, that's my mentality, and it worked. Now, if the third step don't work, we ought to throw it out and go from two to four. But please don't throw it out because it worked for me. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Didn't tell me to try to figure out what's wrong with everybody in this room. What's wrong with you people is none of my damn business. But when I thought about how I might be able to take them hot rocks out of my gut, to come to terms with my higher power and ask God to help me about the things that are wrong with me, and that worked now. That really worked. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. It's not a hard step. We know God ain't gonna tell nobody, but that other human being might. So I turned that step over to God, and you know, I found out that it worked because God furnished that other human being for me. That's the way it happened for me. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Now I am ready right now to have Bob give me $100,000. Well, what's hard about that? To be ready to have somebody else do something, you know what I mean? All right, so I didn't get it, okay? 7, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. So I come and I say, Bob, will you please give me that $100,000? Still didn't say I would get it, but I've done what I was supposed to do. 2 easy steps as far as I'm concerned. 8, made a list of all persons who had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. You know, I stole $10 out of an old lady's purse at a bar one time. She had it, she was drunk, and she had her purse gapped open. That was a $10 bill. I just reached in there and got it because, hell, I wanted to get like she was. And I didn't have any money. And you know, that $10 worried me as if I had committed rape or mass murder or whatever. That just worried the hell out of me. I heard somebody say one time that a drunk, an alcoholic is a drunk with a conscience. And I believe that too. I don't think anybody ever put me in the gas chamber. I'd probably go off somewhere and hang myself. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Now, if you've been sleeping around with somebody's old man or somebody's husband or somebody's old lady, I sure as hell wouldn't advise you to go apologize to them. They'd probably cut your damn throat. But that's an amend that you would make if you could. And only God and you can know that you would if you could. Ten, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Well, the AA member was driving down the street, you know, and he ran over a damn cat, and he felt like hell. He felt terrible. He looked across the street and seen an old lady with a bunch of cats around the house. He says, I bet you I ran over one of that old lady's cats, and I should take it over there and apologize to her and offer to pay her for it. In the spirit of the 10th step, of course. He goes and said, Madam, I'm sorry. I ran over one of your cats. He showed it to her. He said, how much owe you? She said, well, I don't know whether it's one of mine or not. It's all smashed. What did it look like before you hit it? He goes, this is one disease we can enjoy. It's a strange disease, but we can enjoy it. We damn sure don't have to sit around with long faces. No. Old boy goes to church, and that church is dead crap. And boy, he start bouncing his butt up and down the pew, you know, hollering hallelujah, glory to God, to try to liven that place up. One of the deacons woke up, went over there and said, brother, you'll have to stop those noises in our church. We can't have that. So the old boy, deacon walked off, and the old boy started it again. Hallelujah, glory to God, hallelujah. The deacon come back. He says, brother, did I tell you to cut that out? So why do you do it anyway? He said, brother, I can't help it. I've got the Spirit of God within me. He said, well, God damn it, you didn't get into this church. Some people act like it's a damn crime to feel good. And you'll see them, and, you know, I said, good morning, brother, sister, whoever you are. What's good about it? No, I'm glad I'm an alcoholic. I got a way of life today that there is no way in hell I could have had otherwise. I was going to die. It was going to kill me. And I can't think of any other way. I don't want to die. One day at a time, but by the grace of God. You don't do that to yourself. You just don't. Oh, there's a lot of ways to die other than alcohol, and I'll take any of them. I think I heard a comedian say one time, he said, guy wanted to kill himself. He said, don't do that. He said, go down there near the crack house down there and act like you're counting money. They'll do it for you. You know, I heard another old boy say, you know, he said that suicide is a permanent solution for temporary problems. And you know, he's right. Because there's hardly any one of us in this room knew what was bugging us a year ago or a couple of years ago. You know, we don't give a damn about that. That's why it's so important that I stay sober and live my life one day at a time. Because if I would start looking back, I would have no use. It would be horrible. I don't want to look back. Some things I don't want to remember. I remember my drinking. I remember it very vividly. But I do not want to be a lousy, dirty, stinking, rotten drunk again. I don't want that for me. And there are a lot of things that happen in the old days that I would rather not think about or even go into right now. Because I feel that I have made my peace with the higher power. I don't have to rehash the past to the point where it bugs me. Because I'm a survivor. And I must continue to survive. I don't know how much time I've got, but I can't throw away any of it like that. Eleven, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And it doesn't say a damn thing about a Cadillac. I got every material thing that I want. But I can't let that hang me either. 12, having had a spiritual awakening, as a result of these steps, we tried. It didn't say we succeeded. But we did try to carry this message to alcoholics. And the reason we tried is that we didn't get drunk. That step is more for the caller than it could ever be for the called on. Me and my sponsor went to call on an old boy one time and went to this old beat-up rest home. And he was laying up there, he says, we said, are you the gentleman who ought to quit drinking? He says, quit drinking, hell no. He said, I thought they A's buy me a little radio so I'd have something to listen to, you know. I felt like footballing his old butt all over that place. But my sponsor told me, said, don't get pissed, he helped me. I said, what do you mean? That so-and-so is drunk. He said, he helped me because I'm not laying up in a rest home waiting for somebody to buy me a radio so I could enjoy my wine. I thought about that. I said, yeah. Two kinds of people. Those that show you how to do and those that show you how not to do. I come on the program back in 1956. I stayed sober for 3 months. I went back to drinking. I did not believe I was an alcoholic. That's why I went back to drinking. Other than that, I wouldn't have drank it. But you see, I got to feeling good. And then I had a little money in my pocket. And I no longer believed I was an alcoholic. So I got drunk. That last drunk damn nigh took me away from here. I wasn't 29 years old. But it almost killed me. You know, the monkey was monkeying around the lawnmower, and he got his tail chopped off. He looked back there, he said, won't be long now. And the lawnmower said, yeah, and the next time it'll be your ass, too. Now that's what I got to look forward to. I don't even have to work for my living no more. I got Social Security and the city's pension now. That's because I didn't drink. Because I never was much holding a job. I live by myself, and I'm happier that way. I'd rather live by myself than live with anybody. I got nobody to fuss with, nobody to raise hell with. I'm at peace. I can pray if I want to. Nobody can call me a nut. But I'm never lonely. I'm alone at home when I get there, but I am never lonely. Sometimes I might get a little horny. But never lonely. I still make a couple AA meetings a day. I don't have no problem with that at all. When I feel like it, if I have personal business to take care of, I take my own good sweet time, take care of it, and my rent is always paid. I've always got some food at the house. I don't have to argue and raise hell with people no more. And for me, it's still a good life. I'm very grateful to God for it. I hope to hell I'm grateful, but without Alcoholics Anonymous, it wouldn't mean a damn thing at all. My daughter sells us food stamps for crack. Daddy, I got to have something to feed these kids. It's all right. You can feed your kids. I take a few fistful of groceries out there. And I lecture. But I guess the point I'm trying to make, I am able to do that now. I wouldn't be able to do it if I hadn't found this beautiful, magnificent program we call Alcoholics Anonymous. I got me a little car. It's not new, but it's near new. It was new when I bought it. And I'm not bragging, too. I'm just saying that maybe my life isn't as manageable as I'd like it to be. But it's livable. Please, I beg of you, don't go back to it. If you do, there's only one person you can blame, You may blame this person or that person or other, but you're the one who bought the package. You took the drink. Wally, Black Wally. And if you drink, you're going to have to pay the consequences. And I believe this time it will be with my life. The dirty humiliation of dying a lousy, funky, nasty, filthy, rotten-ass drunk. I hope I shall always go to AA. I was at the old court class on alcoholism, and I heard a man make one of the most remarkable statements. It was beautiful, and I've been repeating it ever since, and it goes like this. I would rather go through my life stone sober, believing that I am an alcoholic, than to go through life drunk, even just a little drunk, trying to convince myself I'm not.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.